Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the sixth episode of Season 5, the 70th episode overall, Stormfront Part 2.
And we have a special guest today.
What? That's right. It's our last season, as everyone should be aware. If you're a fan of the cartoon show, you know there's only five seasons. And we had a little idea in mind for the season. We want to show the fans how much we appreciated them in some small way. So we invited fans, if they're interested, to come on to the show and be special guests. And our first volunteer was none other than James Greenwood, X-Men Task superfan. Hello, James.
Hi there, Willie. Hi, Sonia. How are you?
Hi.
Welcome to the world of X-Men.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and chatting to us a bit about this episode of X-Men. This is really cool. It's really exciting for me, actually, to like put voices and personalities to all the comments that we see on the X-Men Test Facebook group, because like that's been the most fun part of the show for me, is like reading people's random questions and comments and different like Marvel and X-related things. So like, yeah, it's just really cool. It's all coming together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you for the opportunity, and just thank you both for the good work you've done. I mean, it's something I look forward to every week, and just am really excited to be able to have this opportunity.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah, thank you so much, James. We're going to ask you the most basic question we ask all our first-time guests. Can you tell us your history with the X-Men show and some memories and, you know, why you might be following this podcast to this day, all these years later?
Absolutely. So I first actually got introduced to X-Men back in with the Pride of the X-Men, that pilot. And I'm old enough, I think I'm a little bit older than you all, from what I've pieced together. But I actually remember when that episode aired live on TV back in the 80s. And I was a little boy then. Oh, but I just happened to be up the day that one came on. And I was just hooked from day one.
Yeah, but then you must have been your heart must have been crushed when it never came back.
Oh, that's exactly what I was about to say. Like, I turned. No, it's so funny. I lived in Ohio, and it came on at like 6:30 a.m. at like the Marvel Action Hour piece, and I came back every Saturday hoping for like the next episode. And you're right, it never came, and so I was like crushed. And so I was super excited a few years later when I saw that they had announced the X-Men animated series show, and so then just have been a super fan since then.
Yeah, I had similar experience to you, but not quite with the X-Men, because I never saw the Pride of the X-Men cartoon. I never knew it existed. Well, I must have known it existed on some level because I played that X-Men video game it was based off.
Right.
And I was like, this is from something. But like my similar experience was the live action Spider-Man show that was from the 1970s. And I feel like they would play reruns around Thanksgiving time on cable TV, like every year. And it's not like the show was good or anything, but I was just so excited that it existed. And like every year I would look for the show just to appear. And some years it wouldn't be there, and some years it would. And then ultimately it would just disappear forever. But it's like, that was like the state of Marvel entertainment on television back then. They were like shooting stars.
Right.
That was just there was no access to information as a kid. I mean, especially as a kid, but even as an adult, I feel like you couldn't really research things. If it was in the TV guide, you would know about it, and if it wasn't, that was it. You know, you could go
through
it.
Yeah, this was pre-internet, so.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny because it's not, you know, the X-Men was a pretty reliable show that came, like, actually, I remember the end of the first season, I didn't realize that there would be a season finale, so after the final episode of season one aired, I was tuning in week after week, waiting for new episodes, and they just kept showing reruns.
Yeah,
I was like, I guess there are no more new ones for a while. And but it's weird. It wasn't just, you know, like I said, the X-Men was kind of a reliable time slot, though, to an extent, because there'd be other Marvel cartoons from that era, like the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and Iron Man.
And I remember like not knowing when they would be on or where to catch them. Really, you would just see them occasionally, and I was excited to try to find them, but I never really could.
Absolutely.
And they weren't hits like X-Men, so, but, you know, I still wanted to see them. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. So then you caught the, you know, the show we know and love, and I'm guessing you were, like, way into it like we were.
Oh, absolutely. Well, before, so even though I was waiting for Pride of the X-Men to come back, which it never did, but, like, for my birthday that year, I got a VHS copy of it at Toys R Us, oh, and man. I just, like, watched the hell out of that thing. And so,
you were quite the cool. I totally would have been your friend, like, you having that artifact. Well, look, no, Sonya's laughing. I mean, like, that was the other thing, too. I remember being at, like, a Pathmark in New Jersey with my mom, and there'd be VHSs of, like, old, like, early 80s Spider-Man TV show episodes. Yeah. And, you know, I made her, like, buy me one for $4.99 or something, and I watched it till it, like, the tape got distorted, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Over.
I don't even remember what episode that was. And then I think, like, and then when X-Men came out, my parents refused to ever go to Pizza Hut because, you know, like, because there was plenty of good local pizza places in our New Jersey town I grew up in. But I made them take me to Pizza Hut just to get the X-Men Night of the Sentinels tape.
Oh, yeah.
Which had the, like, Stan Lee roundtable discussion about the X-Men.
That had an exclusive Pizza Hut release?
Yeah, it was an exclusive Pizza Hut release. And, like, Stan Lee, like, for 5 minutes before the episode started, someone was asking him about the origin of the X-Men. And that was, like, all I knew for years about, you know, the history of the X-Men from that little piece of propaganda that they tacked on to the beginning.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's just, like, a different time where, you know, information, you just really had to grab it where you could and...
Well, and that was part of the fun of it, though, was trying to piece together all these pieces of information and actually try to make something coherent out of it.
Yeah, totally.
I was lucky enough, I had an older cousin who started around that time, just he would pick up X-Men comics for me.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, early 90s, like right at the height of the comic boom. And so that was really just, I started to piece together the whole X-Men history and story from there.
Yeah, me too. I would go buy the comics, like at the time it was when I was a kid. I probably started buying the comics after the cartoon came out just to
see.
And it was the Jim Lee, you know, the early Jim Lee era, those first like 25 issues.
Oh yeah.
And then I also got as a present like the Marvel Masterworks, the first like 5 issues in a paperback.
Oh, okay.
That had like, you know, the original 1960s, and that like I read like 100 times over too.
Yeah.
It's like you're right. And also all the I don't know if you collected the trading cards too as a kid.
Anything X-Men, I had it. Yeah. I had the action figures, I had the comics, I had the board game, just all of the above.
Board game, wow.
But I had the lunchbox.
Oh, you did.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, so X-Men are fucking awesome.
Yes.
They still are. I mean, like, it's just like, you know, it's just one of those things from childhood that was just, it just always seemed like the coolest to me anyway.
Absolutely.
And it's just like a feeling that never went away, and that it's, you know, kind of like it seemed like a no-brainer for us to like do this podcast. Like, I couldn't believe no one had done this podcast to the point in which we started it, and it was like, this needs, how come no one's talking about this?
So, right.
That's where you come in the picture here. So now we've gone all through the first 4 seasons. Now we're sort of at the midpoint of season 5 almost. And this is like the last of the well-animated episodes, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually was going to ask, is that like the reason that you chose this episode, or was the timing just convenient for you, or like...
Kind of all of the above. Like, the timing was really convenient, and then also, yes, deliberately, because it was sort of the last good episodes before the decline in quality. And then the other piece was just that of the X-Men, Storm has always been one of my favorite characters. So doing something that was Storm-centric was really, really appealing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. This episode, so let's say again, Stormfront Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode ended a bit on a cliffhanger. Storm announced a surprise, like, shotgun wedding.
Right.
Conan the Barbarian dude, Archon.
Who's holding the shotgun here? Is it Archon?
Well, I guess it's not a shotgun wedding if you're using the literal definition where, you know, their parents are making them get married. It's more like a whirlwind romance.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's kind of like, it seems like kind of out of character for Storm to like surrender her logic and reason like so quickly to this dude who kidnapped her into another dimension like rather forcibly.
And that's what all her friends say.
Right, yeah. Well, most of them, except
Cyclops. Most of them, yeah, exactly.
It takes Cyclops a long time to like come get around. His head out of his butt in this episode.
Well, it's interesting too, because you mentioned in the last episode sort of the, in the comics, there's this history of Storm sort of falling in relationships with other heroes and other villains too, right? So that like historically there's like big examples of Loki falling for her and Doctor Doom falling for her and Dracula falling for her. There's
Dracula. Wow, that's a deep cut. I just remember, you know, it's like as a kid, I remember I had a comic where she got with Bishop. And it was like a real, like over, it was in the 90s. I'm sure comics are still really like sexily drawn today, but I feel like in the mid 90s, they were really trying to make them a bit more lurid in a way. Like, like Storm was in the bed with Bishop and they're both like naked with like two like straps of cloth just over their private parts.
And I remember, I'll have to look that one up because I remember, it's so funny, I remember like when Bishop was introduced thinking, oh, he and Storm are going to get together, and I really vividly remember this one episode or an issue where Jubilee is talking to her and says, are you and Bishop an item? And she's like, no, we are not. And so
I mean, I have no memory of what the context was as to why they're together and like what the status of the relationship was, but they did not seem to be, they're in bed and they seem to have a really like angry relationship with each other. Bishop was like a real, you know, aggressive dude.
But he killed. The X-Men don't kill.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was like, he's a little more violent in the comics than definitely was in the cartoon. So, and then also like Storm got with, you know, more like modern, famously Black Panther.
Right.
So I don't know if she's had, like you mentioned all the villainous relationships she's had. I don't know if she's had any more relationships with good guys.
I mean, mostly I think it's probably been Forge is probably the one that she was most notably with Forge. through the 90s.
Now. Yeah.
And then the 80s, and they had the big life, was it Life Death, or that arc in the 80s. So that's a big one, but it's a trope of her falling for, like, or the bad guys falling in love with Storm. That was definitely a thing. Because Storm is awesome. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know. Like, Storm is really awesome. I mean, the thing I'm, you know, there's a lot of people in our Facebook group debating whether or not the Disney buyout of Fox is good or bad for the X-Men movie franchise going forward. I think it's just going to be good from the standpoint that I think Disney's going to do an amazing job with Storm specifically.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm eager to see what they'll do with the X-Men, just because, you know, again, the Fox films were great and are great, and they, you know, were beloved for their time, but I'm really eager to see what Marvel can do with it now, because they've just really upped the ante with the superhero movie genre.
I agree. Well, so before we really go into the episode, let me just ask you, what do you think of the portrayals of Storm throughout the movies? I guess we've only really had two actresses playing her.
Yeah, no, it was what it was, right? You know, no, it was great for the time. And, you know, Halle Berry, you know, she's from Ohio, so I also have to, you know, I won't say anything bad about that. But no, it was great for the time. And then I think was the second one, Alexandra Shipp, who is, you know, awesome and looks like Baby Storm, right?
Maybe so not tall enough. I mean, my only problem, I think she was great, actually. I really loved her. I think her part was written, like, stupidly in a way, just, you know, a whole alliance with Apocalypse. But looks great and has, like, an amazing attitude, and she's kind of funny.
Yeah, but I think for both of them, definitely Storm's, like, underwritten and served by either of the films.
Right. You know, Sonya, like, we've rewatched the first three X-Men movies for the podcast.
Yeah.
And I had the vague memory of not liking Halle Berry's performance as Storm. But then, like, rewatching it, like, she wasn't bad. In fact, she had, like, a lot of really cool moments and powerful moments, more than I remembered. But it's like, James, like you said, just kind of underwritten.
Yeah, she wasn't given a lot to work with.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame. So, but anyway, I'm hoping Disney corrects it. And I think they have a lot of incentive, too. There's a lack of strong female characters in the MCU right now.
Yeah.
Storm really fits the bill of, like, you know, one of the most powerful and interesting characters you can possibly have in one of those movies.
Yeah, well, Storm specifically, and then just the X-Men franchise has always been known for the women characters being such the backbone of the title.
You could totally do a movie of just, like, the most powerful female X-Men just teaming up.
I want to see, like, a Rogue and Storm, like, buddy movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, Rogue is the other character that's underserved by the movies.
Yeah, that's a real bummer. And that's the other thing. I wonder how they're gonna, like, go with Rogue, because I feel like they might be, I don't know, like, what Rogue's current state in the comics is. I know she's really complicated character right now, probably, But I just feel I wonder if they're gonna go in that direction, or if they're gonna try to just appease, you know, rapidly aging fossils like ourselves. It's just like the 90s rogue that wore the leather jacket and was bodacious.
Well, especially with the whole, you know, the Captain Marvel movies coming out and how that played such a history in Rogue's past.
Yeah, I mentioned that in the last few episodes. They have to do that. And like Captain Marvel 2, that's where they have to introduce Rogue and just give her the full backstory that, you know, with Mystique and everything. Back to this episode. So, so we're on this weird extra-dimensional world called Polemicus. Storm announced to the X-Men, to their great astonishment, that she's getting married to this Archon dude who is clearly a bad guy. You know, we saw it in the margins of the first episode. This episode opens, they're quickly erecting like 200-foot tall statues of both Archon and Storm, and that's a pretty ostentatious display of love, I guess.
Yeah.
I was going to say power, but I guess at first we still have to assume it, you know, it's a tribute to their love.
Right.
It reminds me a bit, I don't know if you're a Futurama fan, but the episode where Bender goes to, like, the Egyptian planet and he orders the construction of, like, a
Sphinx.
That shoots fire and says, "Remember me."
So I got that strong vibe. But you see, the statues are being built by, well, they're definitely enslaved
people,
like, exactly, ordered around by these floating sentinel type robot things, and you know right away that this is not a good planet to live on or has good values.
I don't remember picking this up the first time I watched it years ago, but just sort of the slavery analogy that's coming across there is pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, this is like another heavy themes moral episode of the X-Men. Like, they've really tackled stuff that not a lot of children shows would dare touch. Mm-hmm. You know, genocide, slavery, bigotry, general hatred and oppression, like really big themes that they squash into a 22-minute like kids cartoon.
And I
you know, applaud them like vigorously for doing that, you know, to, like, teach kids about these things, you know, and it's satisfying that the X-Men like sort of, you know, right these massive wrongs that in the real world are a lot harder to correct, you know?
Absolutely.
I think blow people up.
I think that's another part of the reason that the X-Men comics were always so appealing for me, and are appealing for so many, that there's this inherent sort of social justice message that comes across with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that's like a message that like they really like hit on in the new Disney movies too. I just have a feeling that they're just not going to screw them up. I know I keep talking about the movie. I feel like it's important to talk about the movies as we're transitioning to the end of the cartoon here, looking forward to the future, whatever that might be. But I have a feeling that they're just going to like, it's going to be like their main new franchise that they're going to invest like a tremendous amount of love and care into.
Yeah, no, and that'll be awesome too, just because, I mean, really, especially for the 90s, the X-Men is what kept Marvel afloat. It's actually pretty tragic, like sort of the state that they've been in the last few years in terms of not getting a lot of press. And same thing with the Fantastic Four, actually,
when you think about that. If you were to ask me to rank my like hierarchy of like cool Marvel properties before the movie era started, it would have definitely been X-Men number one. I guess Spider-Man number two, and then Fantastic Four. Avengers would have been like way further down the list.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, nobody cared about the Avengers in the 90s.
Yeah, I would have like ranked, you know, Silver Surfer in there, and you know, like a few other like things like before I got to Avengers.
And, absolutely.
So I mean, now it's like I think the Avengers are cool, obviously, but still, it's like the world. I'm looking forward to the world being righted with the X-Men.
Yes,
they're gonna retake their throne as the coolest.
That's right.
We hope. Anyway, so Cyclops is weirdly okay with his marriage.
it's really interesting. I remember thinking the same thing, that both Beast and Wolverine are saying, well, this is really out of character, or this doesn't seem right. And, you know, it's funny. Cyclops is kind of like, well, who are we to stand in her way if this is what she wants?
I feel like he's just kind of playing devil's advocate, or like giving his friend the benefit of the doubt, like giving Storm the benefit of the doubt. He's kind of like blind to what's going on around him.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
get real, Cyclops.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, like Wolverine's reaction. He like so knows it's wrong, and he just keeps popping his claws at every like point of the conversation too that they're having about it, which I find is ridiculous.
I know, because it's like he's only standing there talking to his friends. He's not going to actually slash anybody, but it's just like he gets so enraged that he can't help it. The claws.
And he had a great line there too. So there was the moment where, you know, Storm overhears them and comes in and says, "No, I'm doing this of my own will, and I really love him, and I'm happy with this man." And Wolverine says,
"Rambling at that."
Well, absolutely. And Wolverine, she's like, "I love this man." And Wolverine says, "Who you just met?"
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I wrote down in my notes during that whole thing, Storm, quote, seems insane, right? what happens next? We see Archon, like, away, I guess, from the X-Men. He's talking with his advisors. His advisors mentioned that the security grid controls the robots that control the slaves that are working on the planet, building these enormous statues of himself, and I guess bringing, you know, order and peace to their world. So right away we know, like, all the mystery is gone about Archon. He's a straight up bad dude. They also says, all right, we're also going to invade this nearby planet, Belgania, even though they have a peace treaty with them.
Right.
He needs to import more workers into his world to help clean it up, because it's been savaged by, I guess, all... Well, it's his own fault for building this weird security tower that causes
the fire. Yeah, I think you talked about that last episode, but that's the whole other piece that, the storms that he kidnapped her to come fix were caused by the tower, and they're just like, well, you could turn it off and that would stop the storms. Yeah. And he's like, well, no.
Which, like I mentioned to Sonya, I'm pretty sure that's the plot of Tomorrowland. I don't know if you saw that movie, but
yeah,
it's like the exact same thing. But Storm, you know, is not convinced yet. She hasn't seen, and like, to me, the only, you know, I hadn't seen this episode in a billion years and only once. Yep. So the question to me is, like, is Storm being mind controlled, or is she just not seen the truth yet? And I guess it's just she hasn't seen the truth.
I don't think there's a mind control element happening.
Yeah, definitely not. Well,
it seemed like that was a legitimate cause for concern at the end of the last episode.
No, I think she was just excited to be, like, happy and in love. She found this world where she helped everybody, and it seems real, like, peaceful and orderly, and this man is magically in love with her, and, like... It's, I don't know, it's, like, too good to be true, but she doesn't want it to be too good to be true, so she's just going with it for now.
She expresses later, she's just stressed out living on Earth, and the endless struggle that the X-Men face. They all have some, like, trauma in their lives from just being mutant outcasts, and also putting their lives on the line to save the universe, like, over and over. Like, it must just, like, stress them out to no end, so... chance at just escaping that, you know, probably
exactly.
Really, they're going to pull that lever.
Not just to escape that too, but really to be adored and to be really sort of held up in this really popular sort of way. And then I think they actually talk to it a little bit, both like when they're talking, Wolverine and the others are talking with Storm, she kind of mentions, number one, you know, I've been devoted to the X-Men since I was a teenager. And so actually I've never really had a chance to sort of have a life and have a fling. So I think when you look at it in that way, it makes a little bit more sense. And then also, Wolverine talks a little bit earlier too. They talk about Storm's past of being worshipped as a goddess in Africa, and just really how this, all of these things that are happening are playing into sort of that past. And,
yeah, that's right. He says something. He's like, "Yeah, it really messed her up," worshipped as a goddess or something.
And Professor X got her past all that. Like a rare example of his therapy working in the continuity of the X-Men universe. It's just like, there's just too much awesomeness with Storm. You know, her whole past as a child thief in Cairo with the Shadow King, and then I guess her adventures with Gambit, and then later, you know, traveling into Africa and being worshipped as a Storm goddess. That's like two movies right there.
That's true.
They can't just, like, that's the thing with these X-Men movies. They can't just, like, they could just tease them out so slowly if they wanted to, giving us like five different origin films and before they all finally unite as a team. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, but I just like, there's just so much like rich history to mine. And this episode, it like touches on a lot of Storm's psychology and everything, and her relationship with her friends and things of that nature. So, Yeah. So also, it's at this point that Storm finally gets a taste that things aren't as they seem on Polemicus. There's like a slave woman who brings Storm like some garments like made of gold that Jubilee's playing with.
Right.
And, you know, Jubilee is just running around and she knocks the servant girl over, and the servant girl is like totally afraid for her life at this point. She thinks Storm is going to like horribly punish her.
Right.
And obviously things are not quite right. And the X-Men also are sort of like scoping the scene on this planet. Wolverine's looking for some burgers and fries.
he's joking, right? He's like,
well, he wants something to eat, obviously, but you know, yeah, he's making a joke. He's just being sort of like a classic rude tourist in a sense.
Well, I think if you ever read like Chris Sims's sort of Comic Alliance reviews of this too, he sort of points out that when he says, "You know where to get a burger," if you look at the guy he's talking to, it looks like he's about to answer.
Right, no, because the guy feels really bad because he noticed the robot is observing him and he has to run away and get back to work building an enormous statue of Storm and Archon. So the X-Men realize like very quickly that they're in the midst of a fascist dictatorship that they're going to have to pretty much single-handedly overthrow, like as happens to them often. Mm-hmm. You know, Storm starts asking questions of Archon. She's like, why are there so many ships flying to this other planet? It seems like a whole armada. He's like, oh, they're just getting wedding gifts for you and supplies to, you know, help the planet.
Well, and I thought that was super interesting, too, because he doesn't actually lie, but he kind of, you know, sort of, you know, fudges it a little bit. He says, oh, they're bringing supplies and dignitaries and workers.
Yeah,
and
like, so Hitler was just conquering Europe for presents for Eva Braun, you know? It was the real motivation.
Exactly. So he didn't out and out lie, but he's sort of rationalizing it with his mindset, right? That this is what we need to make our culture work.
Right, and I did not mean to compare Storm to Eva Braun. In the-
Right.
Let me strike that from the record. And then Archon shows a bit of his true self to Storm. Another servant or slave enters their presence.
And, it's the same girl.
Oh, is it the same girl?
Yeah, I think so.
And she does something that she doesn't kneel in
front of her. She doesn't bow,
She's bringing some more clothes over, and she just walks like a normal person.
Archon
she's
can
carrying
use some more
stuff.
Clothes.
Yeah. And he gets, like, really mad at her. Sidebar, why do Storm and Jubilee get these, like, new Archon clothes? And Beast and Wolverine and Cyclops are still running around in their X-Men outfits.
Yeah.
Well, they were imprisoned in the last episode. Their presence on the planet is not exactly welcome. Archon did not anticipate the X-Men joining. Mm. He's kind of had to just put up with them being, you know, interloper in
his
Jubilee
world. But Jubilee is accepted.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because she's a child. I don't know what the real reason for that is. The X-Men are just sort of, like I said, they're doing some light tourism here before the wedding day. And I think, like, I don't remember what the plot of the comic was that this is based on, but I think it was, like, pretty similar. There's something going on with this world that the X-Men had to fix, like, the climate or something. Mm. And Archon was a bad guy. I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, though, because, like, Beast and Cyclops, does Storm know that they're there and Wolverine?
Yeah, she does.
She does.
Yeah, that was revealed in the last episode.
So she doesn't think it's weird that, like, Jubilee's around all the time and, like, those three are not? She doesn't, like, wonder where they are?
Yeah, and it comes up later, like when they're having like the pre-wedding dinner, that she's wondering a little bit where they are,
for
and Jubilee's
the first
like,
time.
Well, that's a good question. How much time has elapsed since Storm has been kidnapped his world? Like hours.
Anyway, so the servant girl comes with the clothes, and she's not kneeling; she's just walking because she's carrying stuff. And Archon like freaks out at her.
Well, Archon's got technology on his belt that he wears at all time that can torture slaves,
right?
Wirelessly. And Storm's like, I don't think I can live like this. He's like, oh, you don't understand our ways,
right? Because exactly. He like presses some button and it zaps like
that's what I'm saying. It's Bluetooth.
The girls, they're like wrist cuffs or something with that like. Give her an electric shock or something. She's really like in agony, and for the first time Storm's like, what's going on here?
Right.
I'm just thinking like we're not that far away from torture devices being that realistic where you could, someone could strap something on your neck or your arms or wherever in your waist, and through Bluetooth wireless technology, activate a, you know, press a button that causes
shock.
An electric shock.
Or it's like, you know, dog shock collars, right?
Yeah, so, right. I was going to say, that kind of does exist, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's scary to contemplate.
But you're right. So Storm finally sees, like, okay, this isn't so cool. But he's sort of a master manipulator and keeps speaking to her. He's like, oh, don't you love me? Don't you trust me?
She's, like, too stressed out to think clearly you know, about what's going on.
I mean, that's, like, one of the things that makes Archon an actual realistic character, is because he really believes his own rhetoric.
That's right.
So it's like, even though, like, you know, it's twisted, he, like, actually believes that this whole, like, society that he's created needs to be controlled by robots. And
he's a straight-up fascist. He espouses the philosophy that right is might. It's like an ancient, like, ancient Roman time sort of philosophy, too.
Right.
And that the strong should dominate the weak. It's just only the natural way.
Right, and he's just saying to Storm, like, you don't understand everything yet. Like, you haven't been here that long. Just give it some time and, like, trust me. Don't you love me? Like,
yeah. No, you're absolutely right there, Sonya, too, that, like, I think that's what makes him so compelling in some ways, is that, you know, in his mind, he's not a villain.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's that's arguably more alarming, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, he's bought into his own... evil ways.
Well, I mean, that's often the theme of the X-Men. I mean, the heart of the X-Men is Magneto thinks he's the good guy, that he's the hero of the story.
Right, yeah.
I'm not sure if Mr. Sinister thinks he's the hero of the story.
Yeah, he totally does.
Does he?
Yeah. He's performing, like, biological experiments for the betterment of, like, the human genetic code or whatever.
I would say that he
from his point of view, I'm saying.
He said, like, that once. He said, at least in the cartoon I'm speaking, like, he said that at first he's like, I want to create the perfect mutant species that's, like, all powerful. But then later on he kind of says that my goal is to just do my experiments because they interest me.
Right, but I think, like, in his mind, he is the good guy because, like, science is a noble pursuit, and that's what he's doing.
Well, he's not going about it nobly.
We know that, but,
like. Right. But in his mind, it is. And definitely Apocalypse thinks, you know, the whole the strong should survive and all of that. That's their way of life.
Yeah, Apocalypse thinks he's a good guy, too.
But yeah, but, and I mean, there's that old saying, I think, on Jay and Miles, they talk about, well, Magneto did make some valid points, though. He may be a villain, but some logic.
Sabretooth is a straight-up villain, I think, on the show.
He knows he's a bad guy.
Yeah, he's pretty much, like, a horrible bad guy.
But his character isn't Sauron. Given a lot of personality.
Not in the cartoon so much.
Yeah.
I mean, the comics, they go into him a lot. He wasn't my favorite character, Sabretooth, in general.
How does this transfer over to the real world? Does, like...
What do you mean?
Does Scott Pruitt know?
That's a good question.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, we get too political.
Go ahead. That's right.
Anyway, so Beast, Wolverine, and Cyclops, they check out to see what this returning armada is doing, and they see there's a slave trade going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some reason, Cyclops is on the fence about intervening until they meet a liberated slave that's part of the rebellion.
Yeah,
and he sort of starts, like, the fight with the X-Men. And, you know, they start tangling with these robots again. You know, it seems like the X-Men have some trouble with these robots. But to me, just from, like, a nitpicky, like, nerd point of view, these seem like robots Cyclops can easily dispatch, like, with one arcing beam.
Yeah. I had that same thought for a moment, where there's, like, this wave of them coming towards them, and it's like, just open up your optic blast.
Yeah.
You pick it off signals that are way bigger than these things.
Yeah, exactly. Just, like, just keep your eyes open longer than you are. He's doing quick, short, little, accurate blasts of them. But just, like, just stare at the sky.
Right. Just tell Wolverine and Beast to get down and just, like, take care of
His power essentially... like, boils down to looking at things, and then those things will die. And it's, like, kind of weird that he can't, like, really... It's, you know, this is the perfect time to just look at stuff.
And Wolverine gets another good line there too. So when they're first just absorbing the ships and watching the workers come off of it, Wolverine kind of says, you know, you're going to try to tell me these guys are volunteers. And that's another moment where Cyclops is like, all right, I'll give it to you. Maybe something fishy's going on.
Right. And at that point, Wolverine says, now you're talking, you're finally making sense. Like Cyclops, you've been totally, you know, that's another thing. Like Wolverine is usually always 100% right with all his instincts. Like him, he's always smelling like trouble, like literally. Uh-huh. And disaster, and nobody listens to him. They always think he's overreacting. And in my mind, I'm like, Wolverine is 200 years old. You guys are all like wimps compared to him. He knows he's like been in like top secret missions and commando, you know, secret government stuff. Like he's way more experienced than you. You should listen to what Wolverine has to say. It's just weird that he gets no respect ever in these like team leadership.
Well, he's a little crazy, but he's usually right.
He's crazy because he's lived through like six wars. And he's like, right. You know, never died. So he just like always knows what's going to happen. So I don't know. Wolverine doesn't get any respect.
But it gets the best lines and the best action.
Definitely.
So, you know, meanwhile, Storm, like Jubilee is talking to Storm. She's like legitimately torn now. She doesn't really know what to do. But, you know, she senses that she has to like set things right with this Archon guy. The X-Men are now, they're part of this rebellion. Archon orders the X-Men's death when he's informed that they've, you know, hijacked the slave ship. What happens next? Eventually, like, the X-Men, they sort of, like, crash the palace gates again. They blast their way into Archon's midst. And
meanwhile they're having like a fancy wedding dinner, Archon. And Archon is like, why don't you address all of your subjects, and like, this is going to be an annual holiday. I forget what he calls it. He's like, Storm Celebration
the
Day.
Festival of Storm, yeah.
That's right. The Festival of Storm, so everyone can show their love and appreciation for you. And she's like, oh my.
Yeah, she gets very demure in those moments.
She doesn't quite know how she's going to like address these people, but luckily she doesn't have to because her friends come busting in through the wall.
Yeah. And
I've mentioned that recently in episodes. I just love, that's my one thing I love about the X-Men more than anything. They just blast their way to the middle of like whatever the problem is and, you know, immediately try to set things right. You know, they've got like insane confidence to just confront bad people and put them in their place right away. Like all their powers combined for them to just make a tunnel to whatever like the source of the problem is. Like nothing can stop them.
Yeah, that's pretty comics accurate too, especially like with the early X Factor days where they would just bust through walls all the time to enter and everything.
I like that. You know, I can't wait to do the Spider-Man episodes in the future, because I feel Spider-Man's kind of similar in a way. He would just like swing his way right into the middle of these like really complex criminal, you know, conspiracies and cause complete chaos and havoc, and nobody can stop him because Spider-Man's kind of invincible in a way himself. And, you know, he's like too fast and too strong, and he just causes mayhem for all these crooks. It's fun to just see like whole like bad guy layers explode around Spider-Man and the X-Men too when they're like,
but also Spider-Man
butt.
Is a teenager, like a, you know,
yeah,
and that's a hallmark of that age group, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely
feeling
yeah.
invincible, and like Spider-Man totally embodies that, and I feel like Jubilee's
taking
got that
crazy
a little
risks.
Bit too. Like her, she's not, we've talked about this a lot, she's not as superpowered as all the other X-Men, but she's got the confidence to make up from it, and it's just now occurring to me, maybe it's because she's a teenager and
right like,
it's a thing, you know.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I think we talked about this a lot this time too, we often sort of underestimate how powerful Jubilee is, because I mean her powers are kind of weaker on some point, but when you think about like a firecracker or like a Roman candle or something like that, like they have warnings on them for a reason.
If you could take the power of a firecracker or a firework and concentrate them into a beam of endless fireworks and shoot them in someone's face, that's gotta kill them instantly. I don't know why it's always like, she's always, I guess it's just in this era because she's a teenager, she's presented as weak, but really she should be ultra dangerous by the whenever.
Well, but again, it's like certain powers for certain things, right?
Right.
Like, that same situation where Cyclops could have just like blasted all those robots with one beam from his eyeballs, like Jubilee could have been as effective in that situation.
Yeah, that's
just,
right.
Like, blasting fireworks over a swath of sky and getting rid of all those robots.
I mean, it's all done for drama. Like, I've been rewatching a lot of the Batman animated show, and it's like surprising to see how much Batman's ass gets kicked by regular goons that just get the better of him. They just punch him in the face and kick him, and he like goes down, and they almost like kill him in a lot of times. Like, wait, isn't Batman like the greatest ninja in the world? How could anyone like ever get the best of him?
Well, but that's the charm of Batman, is that he's human.
I know, but even still, like, he's kind of inhuman in like how amazing of a fighter he is. Like, yeah. He would like one of the Riddler's thugs should not be able to beat him into submission for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's just like to heighten the drama, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, we all know Batman's amazing.
Yeah, well, and that's also an interesting comparison, since like those are Batman the Animated Series and X-Men are airing at the same time, and so when we talk about the animation quality about the dip, like having that contrasted with Batman that was just so beautifully drawn and animated.
Although I will say though that like at the like later run of Batman, when they transitioned it to, you know, him teaming up with Superman, I feel like the animation dipped too.
There was a redesign there, absolutely.
Yeah, I was so disappointed, and I still am to this day. I
was disappointed that they teamed him up with Superman, personally.
Really? I was disappointed that I was so excited for that Superman cartoon, and I remember, like, sort of enjoying it, but it was never as good as the Batman cartoon.
Right.
And it was done by, like, the exact same animators and writers.
Hmm.
And it was just, like, not quite as good. I started rewatching it semi-recently on Amazon Prime, and it's, like, kind of good, but it's still, like, not enough to really, like, allow me to do a proper binge, because I just keep losing interest.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway, Archon at this point says, throw them in the slave pits, to the X-Men, and that just led me to wonder what a slave pit might be.
Yeah.
It sounds really brutal. You know, we watched, Sonya and I watched Spartacus recently.
Mm.
I feel like there's some slave pits in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben-Hur, I guess, you know, but that, like, in Ben-Hur, it was like a galley. He's in, like, you know, one of those slave galleys ships.
Uh-huh.
Like, so that's what I think of when I think of slave pits, like some, like basement room where people are forced to do physical labor chained up.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty...
Well, this is a moment, too, when they bust in. This is where Storm has that realization. She kind of shells out, you know, they're not servants, they are slaves, right?
Yeah.
And Wolverine, he has another great line there where he says, oh, where do you think they're coming from? How do you think they're getting these slave rates? And they're in the want ads.
But then it's like, I fully expected this moment, like, having not seen the episode in a long time, that Storm would immediately start attacking the security grid that controls the security apparatus that controls all the slaves.
She hasn't, like, pieced it all together, though, has
no,
she?
No, at this point she has.
She has. Okay.
And she's like, all right, I'm leaving. And they just sort of casually leave through the portal. Like, I was like, really? You're just leaving? And then she does, like, at the last second, shoot the security thing and...
Yeah.
I guess free everybody, and she says it's a party.
Well, we have a drama moment there, too, because after she makes the realization, she's sad and starts crying and then sort of flies up and starts, like, making a hurricane.
Yeah, she was going to destroy the whole planet, but Jubilee kind of talks her out of it. Which, you know, that makes sense that Jubilee would talk her down from that. But, like I said, there was just, like, an off moment when they're just casually leaving. Like, I guess we can't do anything. Archon, you're the king. I thought, you know, like, next I'm going to arrest him or something, or, like, give him over to the rebellion and, you know, dethrone him. But they kind of just say, like, well, we don't really have much more to do here. But, like, she does destroy the evil technology that's messing up the world.
Yeah, I mean, she does make it right, but you're right. It's like a little weird that Cyclops, Beast, Wolverine just go running through the portal at the first chance they get. Like,
they had enough.
Yeah, but, you know, normally they're restorers of justice also. I also thought they would, like, stick around and make sure that everyone on, you know,
yeah,
the planet,
like,
was okay.
Cyclops could easily blast that security thing. I mean, the rebellious slaves tell the X-Men about it. They say, this is the source of all our troubles. It just needs to be, like, taken out.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is the last thing she does. That before she goes in the portal, she sort of shocks that with lightning and blasts it down and blasts down the statue of her and everything.
Oh, right, yeah. She knocks her own statue down. And she's like, see ya. And then, so then we're back in Westchester at the X-Mansion. Storm's crying in the, like, upper...
The cupola?
Yeah, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I was going to call it a vestibule. I don't think that's the right word. I'll go with what you said, cupola. And Jubilee wants to, you know, help her, but Wolverine says, no, you got to let her cry. She knows you'd support her, but she just has to sort through some stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Wolverine would know. He's a better therapist than Professor X in a sense, because he's been through some trauma.
No, absolutely. And that's the ending that's, that originally aired, but funny, the DVD set that I watched it on, and it cuts off before that. So after she blasts the tower and her statue, and Archon just sort of yells "Storm," and then it just fades to black at that point. We don't get to see them back at the mansion or anything like that. So I don't know.
Alternate ending.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's a couple of places on the DVD where they've done cuts that were different from what actually aired.
Well, so I know the DVDs too. There's alternate title episodes and different episodes, and there's definitely different like order of episodes. You know, the DVD release was never like really good.
Yeah,
but the reordering makes sense because they were trying to put it
that
right
does.
Since like the air dates weren't correct because of production, whatever. But like shortening an ending or cutting out a scene, like that's weird,
especially for a DVD. That's
well, exactly. You would hope for there to be extras, but like you said, this wasn't sort of the best DVD conversion or anything. There were no extras. There were no interviews. It just feels like a real missed opportunity to give fans.
Well, now maybe
love.
That Disney controls the whole shebang now. Maybe they can finally sort out all the rights and like give us a proper like anniversary Blu-ray release with some special features.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Get some people some royalties that deserve it.
I mean, like comparing the two endings, it actually leaves you with a very different taste in your mouth, right?
That's right.
Like, oh yeah.
When Storm walks through the portal and she's like, I destroyed that tower as like a parting wedding gift, and maybe one day you'll see the right way, and that like the mark of a strong society is not to enslave other people and like show strength in that way, but to actually have like justice and fairness. And then she like saunters off through the portal, never to be seen again by Archon, right?
Right.
But then like you get this extra emotional like piece to it where you actually see that she's not like all good after
she's not
that.
Over the romance in the in the extra bit. It ends with her looking to the sky and envisioning herself with Archon like embracing in the clouds.
But I don't think it's so much to say that like she was so in love with Archon and she can't live, you know, without him or something like that. It's more like she had this chance for a different life that was not with the X-Men, and she was more independent in a way and like kind of moving on with things. So it's more like a missed opportunity for like a new adventure for her.
Yeah, I think it's a little of both, but you're right, Sony. I think it when it cuts in either place, it really leaves a completely different impression of Storm and of the episode. So again, just a really interesting place to cut it and end it. So
So very interesting. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, James. I don't think we'd ever would have caught that. I mean,
well, we would never would have known. We don't watch the DVDs.
Well, but you know what, though? When we originally started the podcast, the show was still on Hulu. And it's hard to say where they were pulling their source material from, because there's differences between the Hulu versions and if you had a downloaded version and then the DVD version. Like, there's differences to be found all over the place.
Mm. Yeah.
And a while ago, I posted, you know, there's been YouTube clips of, like, the original voice of Gladiator. I think they changed his voice twice. Like, I just assumed it was changed once from how I originally remember it being aired, and I taped all the episodes as a kid. But they actually changed it two times, which I thought was insane.
Storm's voice changed, and that was, pretty...
three times.
Well, apparently, I guess there was one actress, so I read the Lee Waltz book, right, and there was one actress who was cast initially who I don't think we ever heard her voice air.
She might have been in the original aired pilot. I don't know, but you're right, it might have never aired.
Well, from what I understand, if I recall correctly, it was a white actress, and they wanted to have a black actress. So that one never aired, and then they had a second actress who came in and voiced it for seasons 1 and 2.
And then they had to redo all those lines with the new
actress. Which is just so messed up.
They want to give the first actress royalties, because I guess she was American.
That's right.
And if you're an American in the recording Hollywood union or whatever, you got royalties forever. But if you're Canadian, you didn't get royalties. So they had to find a Canadian actress. So
yeah, it's insane. Wild. And it's some, back to the DVDs, there are some episodes where they still have the original voice actress and some where they do have the second voice actress. So it's interesting again how that happened.
You know,
and not that
yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say this on that theory too, like, or on that note, there's another podcast. I don't know if you want to plug other people, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Saturday Morning Rewind podcast, and they do interviews with voice actors from cartoons from the 80s and 90s. And,
yeah, tell us about it.
And they have a couple of different episodes where they've interviewed a lot of the X-Men cast. So they've interviewed the voice of Storm and the voice of Rogue and the voice of Jubilee and the voice of Wolverine and the voice of Gambit. That's so awesome. Yeah, it's another great resource for people if they want to learn a little bit more some of the backstage production stuff.
They should definitely check those podcasts out. I know the X-Men cast have done a lot of podcasts, and I feel like I've had the opportunity to ask them to come on this show. I'm just going to apologize to all our fans. I was too nervous to really ask them. I definitely think I could have gotten Cal Dodd as Wolverine and maybe a few others if I reached out, but I was just like, you know, they've done a lot of interviews, and it's just going to be a lot of repeated information. And beyond that, I'm too nervous to talk to them.
I'm sure they're like really super nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like majority of them are Canadian.
Yeah, we talked to
them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Comes with the territory.
But. Yeah, that's true. But like I said, like people should definitely seek out those interviews with the cast. Those people, they did such a great job. Like those voices are burned in my head as the forever voices of the characters.
Absolutely.
At least in my mind. And for our generation. So that's pretty much the whole episode. I think is another great one. Season 5 continues to astonish.
Yeah.
James, any thoughts on the quality of Stormfront's part 1 and 2?
Yeah, no, prepare yourself for the next episode.
Oh my god. I know, it's going to fall off a cliff really fast. It's going to be
absolutely
fun. But I don't know. I think, like, of the badly animated ones, I know for sure there's some good, well-written ones in there.
Yeah, there's good
stuff. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, some of the stories and the writing that they do, it's actually really pretty solid as well. It's just the production of the animation quality.
And I'm not emotionally prepared to hear the new Gambit guys.
Yeah, that's the other one.
That's literally, I remember as a kid deciding not to watch the show anymore when I saw an episode where Gambit's voice changed. I was so mad, and you know, I was like 13 or 14 by that point, and I was just like, I don't care anymore as much, like, because the show's quality, the animation was really bad too. I was like, I don't need to see these last few episodes. So it'll be interesting to see all that terribleness.
Honestly, I kind of had the same reaction when Storm's voice changed, and it was just, it took me a while to adjust to the new one.
I know, yeah. I felt the same way too, but actually now I prefer the newer Storm to the original Storm actress.
Well, you know what's funny too, when they do the Spider-Man crossover episodes, they actually return to the original voice actress.
I know, it's so crazy. I noticed that too, because I recently rewatched that, and I was like, wait a second, why is Storm's voice like different but familiar? So wow, thank you for solving that mystery, James. We'll get to those episodes at some point when I do Spider-Man. And anyway, nice. All I have for this episode, let me do the plugs first before we say goodbye. You could follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Most importantly, join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group, where you could connect with all the fans like James, and you could talk to us, and we'll talk about X-Men and Marvel and whatever, any other topic you want to talk about. And also rate and review us on iTunes, wherever you rate and review podcasts. Give us 5 stars. It goes a long way to spreading the awareness of the show. James, any final words you want to share before we bid adieu?
Yeah, no, thank you again for this opportunity. It's like talking to celebrities. Like, you're real people, not just voices in my iPod.
If,
so,
if only you knew us currently sweating in our studio apartment on a hot Friday night with nothing better to do.
Well, thank you again. This has been great getting a chance to chat with you both.
Yeah, it's been great having you on, and really fun to talk to you in person and see, you know, here, I guess, that you're a real person too.
Yeah, so far the Season 5 fan appreciation experiment is a rousing success, so the future guests have a lot to live up to, James.
You've really
very high. So, and thank you personally for listening and all your support. It really means a lot to us, and stay tuned, keep in touch, all right?
Absolutely.
All right, so that's all I have to say. Sonia, any final words?
No, that's all my words.
Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.